Time to take a look at climate and weather with our weather guys. Well, at least one of them for now. Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, with us by phone. He's at UW-Madison. And John Martin, professor and chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison, will be with us very shortly. He's on his way here. And Steve is probably a lot further away than John. Are you there, Steve?
Yes, I am. I am down in New Orleans.
Oh, New Orleans. All right. So what are you doing? Yes. What are you doing there?
NASA is having a meeting down here. NASA, along with and other European countries, have a bunch of weather satellites who all fly in formation. And people have been using those observations to study clouds and aerosols and land surface properties. And NASA has brought together about 300 people or so to talk about the research that they've been doing.
Well, that's pretty cool. What kinds of research have you been hearing about?
The meeting just started, but the research that we focus on are clouds, the global distributions of clouds and how they've been changing, particularly over the last 10 years. And then in addition to global cloud studies, we've been focusing on what the Great Lakes do to clouds. As, you know, as wintertime approaches and we have those cold air masses come across the Great Lakes, they generate those what we call cloud streets, because the clouds just line up as in streets. And so we've been looking at those cloud properties.
Very, very cool. By the way, if you have a question for Steve Ackerman or John Martin, as I said, John will be with us very shortly. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We finally, Steve, we finally had some precipitation across Wisconsin here in the last day or two, at least the southern part of the state, for sure. But it's been pretty spotty this month, almost non-existent in a lot of parts of the state. What kinds of weather patterns have caused this dry air for the last 4 weeks?
Yeah, we've been, up until recently, as you point out, basically had very little precipitation. And that's because we've been under the influence, basically, of a high-pressure system. And high-pressure systems generally have sinking air above them. And that's not good for getting clouds to form and, therefore, precipitation. So, yeah, we were up to almost 100% below normal until this weekend. And now we're about normal. We caught up pretty quick.
Yeah, there was quite a bit. And now, now we're facing, in some parts of the state, winds, the next couple of days, they're predicting winds of up to 60 miles an hour.
Yeah, you know, I've seen that they are predicting convective-type weather for southern Wisconsin in particular, and associated with that severe weather is high winds, which seems pretty odd to be getting this type of forecast in late October.
I wondered, I could not remember, I was, you know, I'm thinking back, and of course my memory is not that good anyway, but it's hard to remember that kind of weather at this time of the year.
Yeah, I was trying to think of it too, in the time period that I've lived in Wisconsin now for over 20 years, and usually at this time we're worried about whether or not Halloween's going to be cold or not, and
right.
Here we are worried about thunderstorms, which... just not typical.
Well, Jamie in Green Bay has a question for you, so let's go to Jamie. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We had a strange phenomenon in Green Bay, and maybe other people can call in and give a better description. I remember it was the day after Larry's anniversary. Well, I remember it more because it was the day after my birthday.
Oh, hi, Jamie.
But there were just these little spots of clouds scattered all over the sky, and they weren't tall. But there was rain just, like, leaking out of them, and it was really, really heavy downpour under these little patches of clouds.
So they weren't together?
No, they were. They were just, there was blue sky, and then there was just this tiny little cloud, and there was this huge burst underneath it, and there were these spots of rainbows all over. It was just the most odd thing. I was wondering if your guest would know what that was.
So that would have been August. I'm sorry, that would have been not August. That would have been October around 13th. The 12th, 13th. Yeah, 12th, 13th.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like the typical weather conditions you get in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Don't you wish? No, where you get these individual thunderstorms develop, and they don't last very long. They may have a lifetime from start to end of about an hour. And they precipitate out, and they're not very big. And as a result, you get to see a lot of rainbows because there's a lot of blue sky around them.
Yeah. I would think of rain clouds as being stacked really high where they have to build up a lot of stuff, but these were really flat on top, and you could see them all over the city just in spots.
I can't remember seeing that before. So what kind of conditions create that, Steve?
Yeah, usually you have, usually to get a thunderstorm, we need unstable conditions. And by that, that allows, once the air starts to move, to go upwards. So this sounds like it's kind of not very unstable, so that the clouds can't develop very deeply. And yet they can develop enough in order to get some precipitation out of them.
Yeah. Jamie, thanks. JC and from Green Bay has also got a comment on this, so we'll go to him. Thanks, Jamie. Appreciate it. JC, hello.
How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling.
I was stuck right in the middle of that rainstorm that lady was talking about. It was sunny. It was warm. And there's two little rainbows, one on top and one underneath that cloud. And it just poured on the west side of Green Bay. The sun was clear except for that little cots of a cloud. It poured for 10 minutes, and I was stuck in my vehicle. I had to go in the building, and I'm thinking, well, it's going to end sooner or later. And I said, well, I just couldn't wait any longer. And I went out. It just poured, just monsoon. And then about 10 minutes later, it cleared up. It was gone, but those two little rainbows stayed for about a half an hour.
Oh.
And it was awesome.
Oh. So why would the rainbow stay that long, Steve?
Yeah, that's a very interesting observation because, again, I was saying that the storm seemed like it would last a short time. But if you're going to have a rainbow, then you have to have rain in the atmosphere. So it sounds like it was moving rather quickly through the Green Bay area, precipitated, and then must have kept precipitating in order to see that both the primary and the secondary rainbows. So the primary would be the lower one, which is usually the brightest, and then the secondary is the rainbow above it.
Oh, cool. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join us, too, at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call as we talk weather and climate. Steve Ackerman, our guest right now. John Martin will be joining us at some point here, I'm pretty sure. As long as we're talking about storms, let's talk about lightning for a minute. Let me put it this way. Is it correct that lightning kills more people than hurricanes and tornadoes?
Yes and no. I love those answers. And the reason why I say yes and no is that, as with many weather events, it depends on how you do the counting. So, for example, if you look on average the last 30 years, lightning has killed about 57 people per year, whereas hurricanes on average over those 30 years killed about 48 people.
Oh.
Now, if you average over the last 10 years, lightning has killed 41 people, which is good because it shows that education about what to do in the presence of lightning may be working. And hurricanes in the last 10 years have averaged over 100 people. And, of course, that's related to Katrina.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And on lightning, I mean, on tornadoes, whether you're looking at the last 30 years or the last 10 years, tornadoes kill about 56 people a year in Wisconsin. I mean, across the United States.
Across the United States.
Yeah. So you can think of it, one way that I like to think of it is lightning is as dangerous as tornado in terms of threatening to life.
Yeah, it certainly is. Lou in Milwaukee has a comment relating to that, I believe. Lou, hello.
Oh, I have a question about lightning.
Sure.
I have heard that if you can see lightning, no matter how far off in the distance, that it can still get you. Is that true?
Yes. If you can see it, and if you can, if you can see it, then you're in a potential threat to get hit by it. Now, what we call lightning out of the blue is basically lightning that can come out of the top of thunderstorms. So you're not necessarily underneath the storm, but it can come out of the top and down and hit you. And that lightning's pretty powerful, as you might imagine, because it has to go instead of the out of the bottom of the cloud is actually coming out of the top of the cloud. So, yeah, if you can hear lightning, you can see lightning, then you should be thinking that you are potentially in a dangerous situation, depending on where you are.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. I had a figure somewhere. I can't find it. Maybe you know off the top of your head. How many worldwide, how many times each second is the is the Earth struck by lightning bolts?
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting number, and so it's kind of easy to remember. At least for me, it's one of the few numbers I can remember. around the world, lightning hits the ground about 100 times every second.
100 times every second?
Every second. So that's about 8 million times a day lightning hits the ground. And, of course, there's lightning that occurs up in the sky that never hits the ground. And we're estimating that somewhere between 3 times to 10 times as much as the lightning that actually strikes the ground.
Wow.
Yeah. A lot of lightning.
That's a lot of lightning. How the heck do they know that?
We actually have instruments on the ground that can detect when the ground gets hit, and that's in particular across the continental U.S. And those measurements show that over a year, there's about 20 million hits on the U.S. every year. And then more recently, we've had a satellites that actually can observe not just the lightning that hits the ground, but the lightning that stays up in the atmosphere and doesn't hit the ground. And that's how we know it's about somewhere between 3 and 10 times the number of strikes that hit the ground.
Oh, man, that's amazing. Stevens Point has a question for you and about relating to nitrogen, interestingly enough. And we'll get to that, and we'll get to your questions as well as we visit with Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at climate and weather today, Larry Mueller here with my guest, Professor Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison. He's within New Orleans, right, Steve?
New Orleans, right, yes.
New Orleans.
Yeah, I guess there's a proper way to say that, right? New Orleans or something.
Well, at a NASA-sponsored event, so they're taking a look at weather satellites there. And we could take a look at weather satellites here on the program, too, or answer your questions about everything from lightning to hurricanes to whatever the climate or weather question you might have. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email talk at WPR.org. Steve in Stevens Point with a question for you, Steve. So let's go there.
Hello. Love the program. My wife and I actually met in a weather and climate class in college, so every time weather and climate program on, it brings a smile to my face. My brother-in-law is going to school at UW-Stevens Point, and he just did a paper on nitrogen fixation due to lightning in the air, and I had never heard of that before, and I'm hoping you can talk a little bit about that.
And I know only a little bit about it as well. Nitrogen, lightning actually plays an important part in the nitrogen cycle in terms of generating it and then also fixing it in the soil, changing the type of nitrogen compound that's in the soil. And unfortunately, that's about all I know about what it does. I should know more, but I don't.
All right, we can't help you out with that. We can think about, well, maybe John didn't make it today, so I'm not sure what happened to John, but he might have had the answer. Keep that in the back of your head, Steve, and we'll bring it up next time you're on, too.
That sounds good.
Let's go to Martha in Reedsburg. Hi, Martha.
Hi. I experienced this maybe, I would think it had to be in the 90s. The dew point was in the 80s, something similar to what we had this summer. And we'd been down in Madison, and it was very tumultuous. There were storms. There was a tornado warning. We came home, and the sky was kind of clear above us, but there were these puffy little clouds that weren't touching. You could see the stars through them, and there were little lightning bolts that would go from one cloud to another. It was like sparks everywhere. Some were just sparks. Some were teeny tiny little lightning bolts going from cloud to cloud. Have you ever heard of that?
Actually, there's generally what we categorize as three different types of lightning. One is that goes from a cloud to the ground. Another is the type that stays within the same cloud or the same storm. And then the third is between cloud systems. And it sounds like you were hearing or watching that third type where it goes between one cloud and another cloud. And it sounds like it's pretty rare situation in that you can actually see it going in the open air.
There were hundreds of them. There was like hundreds of tiny little clouds, kind of like fish scale clouds, but
yeah,
separated and puffy, and you could see the stars through, and somewhere there was just sparks, and little lightning bolts. It was just gorgeous.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Well, did you see that?
Yeah.
One? Tropics, maybe?
Not so much in the tropics, and the reason why I say that is that a lot of the tropics is water, and so actually lightning doesn't occur that frequently over water. But
sure,
what you need to get lightning to form is a cloud that has both liquid water in it and ice in it. And it's kind of like, in my mind, lightning is a big static electricity, kind of like what you get when you rub, a rubber balloon on a wool shirt. And so in the cloud, it's the liquid water and the ice that serve as sort of like the rubber and the wool to charge a cloud. So I wonder if you could really see it well because you were actually looking at it at nighttime so that you can see these clouds that are growing, that have a mixture of liquid water and ice water in it. They're getting statically charged up, and instead of exchanging charges in the cloud, they're doing it between the clouds. So you're seeing the sparks much like you would see when you reach for a doorknob when you're walking on a rug.
That's what it looked like, really, like little static charges.
Very cool.
Yeah, and it was still quite stormy down by Madison, and it was like the edge of the front or the whatever activity was going on down there. So it was really cool. I doubt if I'll ever say anything like that again, but it was nice. Well, thank you.
You were lucky, Martha.
I know. Yeah.
Thanks a lot for calling.
It sounds like something I'd like to see.
Yeah, me too. And those would have been in terms of heat generated, that'd have been small compared to the big bolts. What do they get, 50,000 degrees Fahrenheit or something? Lightning?
Yeah, those big ones that you see, those big flashes that you often see photos of, are five times the temperature of the sun, or about, 50,000 degrees.
Oh, man.
That's hot.
That's hot.
Actually, is she still on? I was wondering if she heard any lightning go with it.
Marcy, is still there?
Yes, I am. I didn't hear the question.
Did you hear any
thunder?
No thunder.
No thunder.
It was just serene. Yeah. It was serene and quite beautiful.
Oh, man. Yeah. It sounds like it.
I had a video camera then.
Yeah. That's,
oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
Now, I'd have been tempted to pull over and get my iPhone out and do a little movie. Oh, Martha, thank you so much. Great story. Paul in Duluth, Minnesota, we are turning to you now. Hi, Paul.
Hey, good morning. The conversation seems to be around lightning, but I want to know what the winter projections are for precipitation and temperature. I'm particularly, of course, interested in like northern Wisconsin and Minnesota. I haven't really heard too much about it yet.
Okay. What's...
I'll listen off the air if I could.
Okay, so what's our winter weather going to be like, Steve?
Well, the good news is that we are entering a La Nina time period. And the reason why that's good news is that it's the opposite of El Nino. And in an El Nino, our winters really aren't very good in the sense that we don't get very much snowfall. So the La Nina is the opposite of El Nino, although it doesn't necessarily guarantee that we'll get above average snowfall. But we can expect a winter that should be about average or a little bit above average with regard to snowfall.
Okay, so...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and what's the average? It depends on part of the state. Depends on the state, a part of the state, I believe.
Exactly right. It really depends on where you're living.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But figure about average or so. All right.
Right.
Let's go to Bob. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to mention, too, that during the forecast for the temperature is, again, about average or a little bit above average for this winter.
Okay. Above average as in a little warmer then?
A little warmer, right.
Yeah. Okay. Bob in Blue Mounds. Hi.
Yes, hi. I was, it's political season, and I understand, you know, you can't make endorsements, but we do have a Senate candidate who's a climate change denier and believes that sunspots are primarily the cause of climate change that is occurring and not man-made activity, and that appears to be true around the country for members of that particular political party. I'm wondering if you've seen anything in the last few months that changes your opinion on the cause of climate change and the seriousness of climate change, and I'll listen off the air. Thanks.
All right.
Yeah, it's really too bad that the science part of climate change and even weather forecasting to some degree gets politicized and not really analyzed in terms of the facts. And the facts are that, yes, the Earth is warming. It's warming at a rate that we really haven't seen, and a rate that does not correlate with sunspots, as some people have been claiming, without presenting any type of scientific evidence that supports that claim. And that's the frustrating part, I think, for many of us scientists who follow climate and climate change, is when someone, whether they're a political candidate or a political commentary, just makes these, what one might call a willy-nilly statement that really cannot be backed by the scientific evidence. It's very frustrating, you know, because it's not like there's unknown relationships between what the sun is doing and what climate change is. Doesn't say there aren't things that we have to learn yet, but to be saying that global warming is associated with sunspots is just a position that is being taken either because they don't have good scientific advisors, or they have advisors that may be good, but they really shouldn't be listening to them.
Yeah.
So it's a bit frustrating for us scientists, because it is serious in terms of the potential changes that we're looking at. And I think rather than trying to dismiss the science by making unfounded claims, it would be a lot better to be talking about what, if anything, we should be doing about it.
Yeah.
I mean, saying that things are going to change is a first step to deciding what, if anything, we should do. And that would be a much more constructive and difficult dialogue to engage in. And rather than engage in it, people are trying to avoid it. And that's just a shame.
Thanks for that call and question. Let's go to Craig and Hayward next. Hi, Craig.
Yeah, hi. I live in a wooded rural area in northern Wisconsin. And several years ago, I was walking down my driveway at night, and suddenly everything was lit up around me for a fraction of a second, like, you know, spotlight bright. And I thought I was about to be beamed up or something, but I'm wondering if, can that happen from a reflection off a satellite, or, you know, is there some explanation why you would suddenly be surrounded by bright light at night like that?
Actually, there is a potential thing that could be happening. We have up in space, and Europeans also have space, LIDARs, which send down beams of light, which are harmless. They're used to probe the atmosphere and determine how much pollution is in the atmosphere. But if you're out in the middle of an area where it's very, very dark, and in the right place at the right time, you could actually see that beam of light come down and light up the area that you're in.
Okay, there was snow cover at the time, too, so that helped.
And yes, snow cover would certainly help it. And we've actually observed that, because we know we have one of these. We're involved with one of these NASA programs, actually, down here in New Orleans. And so folks have actually gone out knowing where the LIDAR light beam is going to hit, and actually looked up and watched it. And actually, boom, you could actually see it for just a split second.
Uh-huh. Cool.
And it would light up the ground in the area around you as well.
Yeah. Yep. It would light up an area that would probably be about 900 feet in diameter. And it would be just like you said. It would be like a flash. Everything would get lit up like a big flashlight, and then just go away again. And so it sounds like you were what I would call fortunate enough to be there, because it would be very, very rare that you could be in the right place at the right time and see that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate the call. That would be neat to see. But also, you're in the middle of nowhere walking on and suddenly this light comes in, and, you know, you do wonder if you're going to get beamed up, I guess.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be kind of spooky.
Yeah, it would be especially this time of the year, Halloween and all. Let's go to Jackie in Milwaukee next. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. No special thing like that, but I like to take pictures of different things in my backyard on the northwest side of Milwaukee, and I have a picture. I got enlargements of it. The top triangle is beautiful, absolutely gorgeous blue sky. The next part of it is white, fluffy, lots of white, fluffy clouds. And then the lower part of it, which has a tree sticking up in my backyard, is pale orange. I took three different shots of this. It was last summer, and I've been trying to figure out where the orange could have come from.
And a
friend of mine told me it must have been a fire someplace. Well, I kind of checked, because I'm nosy. Larry knows me. But there was no fire anywhere around. And I got three different shots of this, and the clouds were moving, and this orange was moving along. What causes different colors in the clouds?
And what time of day was this?
Had to be the middle of the day.
Middle of the day.
Middle of the day. Had to be afternoon, because I wasn't home that day earlier. And it came as I took the pictures. The different clouds were moving very slowly. I mean, it wasn't a lot of wind or anything like that, but it is absolutely gorgeous. I enlarged it. I have it hanging in my kitchen. But what else could cause orange like that?
Boy, yeah, that's a interesting situation, because there are two things that come to mind. And the first, which would be atmospheric, is that sometimes the sky on the horizon, which sounds like it would be below the cloud, takes on a brownish color due to pollution. But you describing it as orange doesn't make it sound like that's what it would be. The only other thing I could think of, but again, this doesn't sound too practical, is that, you know, sometimes, like, when helicopters are landing and things like that, they put out flares, markers, for them to come. But again,
there's too much orange for just a marker that a helicopter
would
have. Yeah.
And as I said, as I took three different pictures, and it was moving along, not really fast, and it's gorgeous.
Was that a digital camera?
No.
Oh,
I was old-fashioned.
I was going to say, if it was a digital, I'd ask you if you wouldn't mind sending it to my Facebook page so we could take it.
I'll send you the picture in an envelope, Larry. I'm not a digital person or a computer person. I talk a lot. I don't have the technology, but I'll send you the picture.
Oh, I would love to see it.
And it is.
Yeah, I would too. That'd be a great idea. Then we can look at it and try and figure out where it came from. Because it's that stuff that any explanation that I can think of just doesn't seem to match with the time of day that you're talking about. So.
Yeah. So,
it's just worth 1,000 words.
Thanks, Jackie. If you'd send that, then we'll talk about it next month.
I'll send it.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you know the address for Wisconsin Public Radio, so go right ahead and send it along. Very interesting. Let's go to Deborah in Milwaukee next. Deborah, hi.
Hi, I'm actually in Brown Deer, and about a year and a half ago, I was leaving a neighbor's house and looking out, that would be east, and there was a bright fluorescent green. I mean, it was extraordinarily bright, and it was like a meteor, but it was huge, and I screamed, and my son looked, so he saw it also, and I do not know what it was. It was like wide and lasted for I'd say four to five seconds.
It flashed across the sky.
Down. It was going down. Like.
And what time? What was this at night?
Early evening.
Early evening.
The sun was. I can't remember. I've documented it someplace, but it was. I'm thinking April maybe, not last April. So I guess it was almost 2 years ago. I have to look at my documents, but it was so bright. I mean, it was like an artificial green that, you know, not typical.
Yeah. We were talking earlier with the person up in Haywood who saw this flash of light. And actually what you saw also sounds like one of these light beams that we send down to study aerosols.
Well, it was like a meteor, more like a meteor. It looked like a meteor.
It could have been a meteor, but usually meteors aren't green. You said it was green, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this light beam that we send down is actually a green light beam as well.
Wow.
So it could have been that, or it could have been a meteor. I think copper generates, when we burn it, a greenish color. So it's possible that, you know, maybe it was a meteor that had a lot of copper in it as well.
How far away is it by, you know, how could I judge how far away that actually was from where I was?
Oh, that's a good question. That's tough. Distances get really tough to judge, particularly if you're looking, you know, out over the water. And actually, you know, the more we talk about this, the more I'm going to bet it was a meteor, because I think if it was the LIDAR beam, you actually would have seen a couple of those as it went up the lake. Not that it was a meteor.
I grew up in the Upper Peninsula. I would take my sleeping bag down to the beach at night and watch the northern lights. And I go outside at night now and like a little trooper waiting for the northern lights when it's clear out. And I've yet to see them around here.
Wow.
Yeah, it probably wasn't the northern lights.
Oh, I know that.
They're more like a curtain.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can sign up to get an alert for the potential of the northern lights in your areas by going to spaceweather.com.
Okay.
If you go there, they used to have this link where you could sign up, and if it looked like there was a good probability to have lightning in southern Wisconsin, they'll send you an email.
Northern lights, you mean, yeah.
Northern lights, I'm sorry, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. That's spaceweather.com. All right. Thanks. Thanks very much for calling. Somebody said that nitrogen in the lightning takes the nitrogen in the atmosphere and converts it to readily available nitrogen as it hits the ground.
Okay. So, there is actually a woman in soil science, Terry Balzar, who has a game that looks at the nitrogen cycle in the soils and the atmosphere. And I know lightning is part of that game. So we should all go to her webpage and find that game and play it. So I know I'm going to have to play it so I can learn about nitrogen.
Wow, this is a lot of fun, Steve. Thank you so much for being with us. Good luck with the rest of your conference. And, oh, man, we'll see you the last Monday of November. It'll be a little colder then, I guess.
I'm guessing so, too. And I'm going to bet no thunderstorms either.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
All right. See you later.
Yep. See you later. Thank you very much. Steve Ackerman, Director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison, our guest. And I bet John Martin joins us next month, and he'll be the last Monday of November. Here we'll be. Tomorrow at 11, we'll take a look at sentencing options for judges with Professor Ken Strait of the UW-Madison Law School and Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm. And then a look at Wisconsin's food heritage with Donna Neuwirth and Adrian Fox, who has a small family farm business in Viroqua. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.